This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, yeah. And here we are on the 22nd, graduation Sunday here in Charlottesville. Happy graduation. Happy graduation. Congratulations to everyone who is deserving here on May 22nd, 2011. I guess we'll do that again in another week or two as the graduation high schools do their thing. Our guest today, Cale Jaffe, will be talking about environmental topics. And because we can be here, let me thank L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of affordable jewelry, including estate jewelry and hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, loose or mounted. They have gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. And special shout out to those in Crozet and the Valley listening on the new 101.1. All right, let's welcome our guest, Cale.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you're always welcome. It's a beautiful Sunday, so thank you for giving up your hour plus to come in to WNRN. Our guest, Cale Jaffe, from the Southern Environmental Law Center. He's a senior attorney there. How long does it take to become a senior attorney?
You know, it's a lot faster than I would have expected. I started with Southern Environmental Law Center in April of 2004. I'd actually been an attorney at a firm in Richmond before that, and started as an associate attorney, and now they're going to have trouble kicking me out.
I like that theory. They have trouble kicking me out. Maybe I'll apply that here, although not everybody may go for that. So we will be talking about uranium mining in Virginia. We've done some, I guess, stories in the past, some environmental stories about mining and how things are negatively affected. Southern Environmental Law Center has helped me do shows on coal mining, on Chesapeake Bay, issues. So we're going to start off with an easy question.
Sure.
It seems that Southern Environmental Law Center is always against mining of most sorts, whether it's coal mining, and granted, that's almost always the shows have been about strip mining. Is there any way for any product, whether it's uranium or coal or other, to be done in a manner that Southern Environmental Law Center is for, says, okay, that's all right, we'll go for that?
Well, you know, in terms of a particular mine operation, you know, that's obviously going to be fact-specific. It's going to be contextual. There are, of course, a lot of things that we are for, and we do have a positive vision for Virginia's energy future. You know, the number one thing that Virginia could be investing more in is energy efficiency. Energy efficiency is a great tool for a couple of reasons. One, it's cheap. Various studies have come out to say that you can get energy efficiency going for about 3 cents per kilowatt hour. New coal-fired power plant is 10 cents per kilowatt hour. A new nuclear reactor could be even more than that. So the cheapest option is energy efficiency. The other thing that's great about it, it's got a great jobs per kilowatt hour ratio. You know, you build a power plant, you build this one huge monolithic thing that generates thousands of megawatts, you know, 1,500 megawatts, something like that, and employs, relatively speaking, a small number of people to run that plant. If you do energy efficiency, the way that works is you've got to put a lot of folks out into the field to insulate homes, install new equipment, you know, new HVAC systems, new windows, all that kind of stuff puts a lot of people to work very quickly. The other great thing about efficiency, and I'll get off my soapbox on efficiency here, is it is it's very modular. You know, energy forecasts, and I've talked to folks in the industry who will say, yeah, the one thing I can tell you about a forecast is that it's wrong. It's, you know, it's very complex. It's impossible to nail it exactly right. With energy efficiency, you've got this ability to monitor and change your efficiency programs, you know, quarter by quarter, depending on how things are working. If you build a massive new coal-fired power plant, and all of a sudden it turns out that energy demand did not meet that need, well, you're still stuck paying for that huge power plant. You've got those, you know, sometimes you might end up with what are called stranded costs in the industry because you've built something that you didn't end up needing. So that's the first piece of it. And of course, you know, renewables are an important piece of it. There's a lot that we can be doing that are, to create a positive energy future for Virginia.
So when we talk about Southern Environmental Law Center, and you've been there since 2004?
That's right.
And there are other members there who've been on the program before, who've been there even longer periods of time than that. I can't find any issue where we're talking about mining where SELC would say, we're okay with that. And I don't mean to, I'm not trying to set mm-hmm. that aside as a, here I'm here to hammer against you today, but I think it's fair for those who are listening early on to say, okay, what is the topic? Where's the topic going to go? And I think for the most part, uranium mining in Virginia for the hour, we'll be talking about the negative aspects mm-hmm. of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of, you know, being for or against a particular mining operation, I mean, it's important to recognize that whether you're talking coal or uranium, there are obviously going to be significant environmental impacts from any type of mining. Our first job in getting involved in a matter is to as best we can, advocate for managing those risks and assessing the dangers and the threats that a particular operation poses, ideally before that operation gets really started, so you can stop a problem or address a threat before it's too late.
Cale Jaffee's our guest today from the Southern Environmental Law Center, the Charlottesville office, here talking about uranium mining in Virginia, which is something that a couple organizations are attempting to be able to do in 2012. What's the value of uranium in the state? Not necessarily, I don't want to talk yet about the bad things and all the costs, the negative mm-hmm. costs that may go with that, but there's at least one company, Virginia Uranium Incorporated, is that the proper name of the company?
That's right.
And they're saying that the value of uranium that we found is blank trillions of dollars out there for people and businesses.
Well, what they're saying in Virginia Uranium Incorporated is it's also affiliated with a company called Virginia Energy Resources. Their company website is santoy.ca. It's actually a Canadian company, despite the Virginia Energy Resources name. And they're publicly traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange. The value of the deposit that they've got in South Side of Virginia fluctuates, of course, with the price of uranium. You know, for a while there, it was up over $70 a pound for uranium. Now it's down. I think last I looked, it was about $56 a pound. And obviously, whether this site is economic to mine depends on whether the price stays high enough for it to mine. If the price drops significantly, then you know it may not be economic to mine just based on the percentage of uranium that's in the ore down there. What they've said about the size of this particular deposit is they've been telling investors that this is the largest uranium deposit in the United States and the seventh largest in North America. So it's a very significant deposit of uranium. The other piece that they've been telling investors, and this is presentations that they've given in London and in Wall Street, New York City, the beauty of the internet, we can all sort of get access to these presentations, even if we can't be in the investors' halls in London. But they've been saying, you know, our lead geologist is insistent, that's the company's word, insistent to this day that this is the first of more major discoveries in Virginia. So we talk a lot about this one particular mine that they want to get started on, but of course there are lots of sites throughout the Commonwealth that could very well be the next mine.
And let's give a name on that. I believe that the mine that we will be spending the majority of our hour discussing with Cale Jaffee from the Southern Environmental Law Center, the uranium mine Coles Hill?
That's right. Yeah, it's the Coles Hill deposit. It's what it's referred to. And it was discovered back in, I think, the late 70s is when they first found it.
And WNRN goes down to Lynchburg and actually a little further down than that, south of here, because Coles Hill is nearly straight south of the Charlottesville area.
And much closer to us, actually, back in the 80s when the company, when the mining companies were first looking at this issue. They looked at, and I think it's useful to get this history a little bit. So they found these deposits in the late 70s, early 80s, and they started this push towards mining, and as a result, they obtained leases to go ahead and drill to evaluate the various uranium deposits. They had leases in Culpeper, in Orange County. I knew a farmer in Somerset who had Marline Corporation, big uranium company, come directly to his farm and really try to pressure him into letting them mine on his land. So that was done in the early 80s. 1982, the Virginia General Assembly said, hey, wait a minute, we don't know a lot about the risk that this poses. They put into place a moratorium prohibiting uranium mining in Virginia, and that moratorium is still in the books today.
And so here we are. I always have to do the math in my head because it seems like I didn't realize I was this old now. 30 years.
Yeah. It'll be just short 30 years this year.
And so 30 years without any uranium mining, and here we are with someone or some business asking us to allow them to do it. And Southern Environmental Law Center says, are you saying no or are you saying wait?
I would say that I would put us in the camp of folks who are skeptical about whether it can be mined safely. I think obviously it's got to be something that, there are a lot of studies that are ongoing right now, and we need to take the time to evaluate those studies. And if it's helpful, let me just tell you what the various studies are.
Yeah, because from my understanding, there's at least four
right.
studies that are ongoing. And that's some of this is to satisfy their own needs or the citizens' needs. And some of this is for the legislators to make a 2012 assessment of their own.
Exactly. What happened was they first pushed a bill to lift the ban on uranium mining back in, I think it was 2008, I want to say. And they pushed a study bill at that time, said, let's study whether we can do this, and at the same time, let's develop the regulations to allow us to go forward in mine. We opposed that bill. We said, well, that's sort of putting the cart before the horse. You say you're going to study it, but you're also at the exact same time developing the regulations to go ahead in mine. It's sort of presuming the study's going to come out in your favor. So we said, we opposed that bill. That bill was defeated in 2008. Then the Coal and Energy Commission, which is a state commission of senators and delegates, decided they wanted to go forward and just study the issue squarely. So they've started a study with the National Academy of Sciences, which is supposed to, they're on track to try to finish their report up by the end of this year, December 2011. A key thing about the National Academy of Sciences study, or the NAS study as a lot of people refer to it, is I've talked to folks who say, the NAS is going to tell us if it's going to be mined safely. Well, the NAS has said that's not what we're doing at all. That's a public policy decision on whether you think you can go forward with it or not. All we're doing is we're going to provide some science and technical information to you. And essentially what they're saying is we're going to help inform your debate with a lot of data on this issue, but we're not going to resolve the debate for you. Virginia legislators have to decide what level of risk they're comfortable with, whether this poses too much of a threat and they don't want to take their risk, keep the ban in place, or whether they say, I think we can manage that risk. The chances of something happening are smaller, not zero. Obviously, there's always going to be some risk, but if they feel like they can manage that risk, then they'll go forward. That's sort of the calculus that's at stake.
There are also several other studies. Again, we're talking about uranium mining in Virginia. Let me ask a simple question that I should have started the program with. Isn't uranium radioactive? I mean, why in the world would a state with a lot of agriculture, with a fairly large number of people, allow a radioactive substance to be mined?
Well, I think that's precisely the issue. It is obviously highly radioactive.
But it's mined elsewhere, so that's why I want to know why here, but it's okay there, or it's okay there, but not here.
The big areas where it's mined, at least in North America, you've got a lot of sites out in southwest area, sort of old Navajo territory reservations. You've got sites in Arizona and New Mexico. You've also got a site called Rabbit Lake up in Saskatchewan. This is so far north and remote, the Rabbit Lake site. I don't believe you can even drive to it. You've got to sort of charter a private plane to sort of bring you into it. So the other places where mining has occurred are either, one, extremely remote in terms of population density, or they're also extremely arid areas.
And why does that matter?
Well, because when you mine the uranium, the big threat is a water quality threat. You know, a lot of people say mining uranium in Virginia is an energy issue for the state. I really don't see it as so much as an energy concern as it is a water quality concern. Because if you're mining in the, let's say in this case, in the Roanoke River watershed, the threat is to downstream areas. Now, if you get a major hurricane or a tropical storm or just a significant weather event, you run the risk of overflowing your containment cells, overflowing the management you've set up for the uranium tailings, in other words, the radioactive waste that comes from the mining that you've got to dispose of on site. Now, if you're in an arid area where the amount of evaporation greatly exceeds the amount of precipitation that you get, it's easier to manage that. There's less water to wash those radioactive tailings into people's water supplies. Area here, where it's a wet weather climate, we get a lot more precip than we do evaporation. The threat to water quality is that much greater, especially if something goes wrong with the containment cell.
But that's not a concern in an arid area. I mean, it's water meeting uranium that causes the problem. It's not, you know, drilling for it and mining it in a desert. There's no concern there for the American Indians in...
Oh, no. There are huge concerns in those communities. In fact,
just not enough people to complain about it?
No. There's been significant, cancer cases, studies of cancer, cancer clusters associated with these uranium mines out west. There is a huge fight that's sort of going on right now about a proposed mine very near the Grand Canyon that our folks are out west are working to stop. So there are absolutely issues there. We're just saying the unique threats here are in large part because of the fact that there are a lot of people that happen to live relatively close to this site, so there's human risk, and there's the water quality risk.
11:18 here on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest, Cale Jaffe, he is from the Southern Environmental Law Center. We're talking about uranium mining in Virginia, something that has been banned since 1982.
That's right.
And is being discussed for a possible change of decision for the 2012 legislature. Let me give you the weather. Let me find all the papers to give you the weather. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly sunny with a chance of afternoon thunder showers. Later today, highs in the mid-80s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with about a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Lows in the mid-60s. Then highs 85 to 90 tomorrow. Right now, it's cloudy out there. 74 in the valley, 71 in Lynchburg, 80 in Richmond, 77 on graduation Sunday in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank the Howardsville Canoe Livery for their support. They invite you to their grand opening on May 26th for a relaxing float on the James, Rockfish, or Ty Rivers. Howardsville Canoe Livery is the next generation of river outfitters and embraces a leave-no-trace philosophy, focusing on quality outdoor adventures for the entire family. For more information, call them at 434-286-3331. Online, it's howardsvillecanoe.com. All right, back with Cale.
Yeah, and Rick, if I can, let me tell you a little bit more about some of the other the studies. One of the big ones that's going on is by the City of Virginia Beach. a city of Virginia Beach is a pretty conservative community, but they're also a community with a hugely important tourism-based economy, and they also happen to be downstream from this proposed uranium site. The city of Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake, they get a lot of their water from a place called Lake Gaston, which is on the Roanoke River, which is directly downstream from this Coles Hill site that we're talking in Southside. And what the first stage of their report from the city of Virginia Beach has found is that a worst case storm, if a worst case storm triggered a spill, the water supply for the city of Virginia Beach could be contaminated for up to 2 years. So the city is very concerned about that. You know, in other words, you've got this containment cell holding all these radioactive uranium tailings. Even after you remove the uranium and you mill it into yellowcake, which you have to do on site, 85% of the radioactivity remains in the waste rock. So that's got to be stored on site. If a spill happens, you know, let's say back in, I think it was 1996, Hurricane Fran passed right over that area, actually flooded part of the Coles Hill site. Let's say you get another storm like Hurricane Fran or a different major storm, and it breaches a containment cell. So you get uranium contaminated waste going into the Roanoke River watershed, into Lake Gaston. That poses a significant threat to the city of Virginia Beach.
2 years?
That was.
It seems to me like that's a little teeny amount. Not that if I have a choice of my drinking water being contaminated for no years or 2 years, but my expectation of that worst case scenario would have been, I mean, it's radioactive. Hundreds of years, right? Isn't that what we're always told?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the waste itself remains obviously radioactive for centuries and centuries. In terms of the water system's ability to flush that contamination out, it would take 2 years of the Roanoke constantly pushing that water out before levels drop to down to where the EPA would say, okay, this is no longer unsafe.
Now you can drink it.
Right. Don't drink it now. Don't wash your... Take a shower in it yet, but okay, now it's
okay.
But
July 1st, 2014, you can go out and drink it then. Make sure your kids have, you know, annoyed it and forgotten it until then. But 2 years from now, your kids are safe to drink it.
And just to put a point on how significant this threat is, there's a national group called American Rivers, which for years has put out a list of the 10 most endangered rivers in the nation. And they just this week released the 2011 Most Endangered Rivers list. It's got rivers in Alaska, down in Alabama, out in California. Number three on that list was the Roanoke River down here in Southside. Runs from the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia down to the Outer Banks, North Carolina, Albemarle Sound. And the threat there to the Roanoke River that put it on this national list was solely because of uranium mining. The threat of the ban being lifted this year is why it ended up on that most endangered rivers list.
Aren't there organizations, and you talked about the National Academy of Sciences and their study, and Virginia Beach study. I'm not sure who exactly did that, but I would think they found some accredited science group
study. They got, I think it's Michael Baker Corporation, which is a multinational, large engineering consulting firm.
Are there, I would assume that the Virginia Uranium Incorporated found some accredited science group to say, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. It's not going to happen. Are there any science groups that are on the other side of the seesaw?
Well, first, to be clear, the National Academy of Sciences, I don't think is not on anyone's particular side. They're trying to stay as impartial as possible. But no, I've not seen any study by any sort of, you know, nationally accredited or sort of internationally famous group that has said, or frankly, I haven't seen any study that says absolutely it's 100% safe. There's zero risk of an accident. And I've heard from the mining company, they've said, oh, we will mine safely, absolutely. Well, you know, BP told us that they would drill safely in the Gulf. You know, there's always permits, there's always regulations, there's always safeguards. But the question is, you know, the threat remains, and how comfortable are you with that threat? How can you manage that threat?
We are talking about uranium mining in Virginia, the possibility of having a moratorium taken away next year in 2012 by the Virginia legislature. Cale Jaffe is our guest from the Southern Environmental Law Center. If you'd like to dial up and ask a question, make a comment, 979-0919 in the local area. Obviously, this topic goes throughout the state. For if you need the toll-free number, it's 1-877-967-6762. That's 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS or 979-0919. Let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be on the air today. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind, have fun, and to do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found in Charlottesville at Barracks Road Shopping Center and at three locations in Richmond. For more store information, it's brms.com. Kale, you mentioned how the Roanoke River goes down to the Outer Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and everything that we've spoken about so far is Virginia, Virginia, Virginia. If something in regards to mining that would have to do with Virginia's legal decisions in terms of allowing it or not allowing it to happen, what does North Carolina get to say about it, and what do they have to say about it so far?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And North Carolina is waking up to this issue because the ban is a state law ban, because the regulations that would have to go into place to mine it would have to be Virginia state regulations. So far, there hasn't been a lot for North Carolina to do, but as it's become clear that this mining company is pushing to lift the ban at the upcoming General Assembly session, which starts in January 2012, North Carolina has woken up and realized, hey, we're downstream from this. We face the threat, and we don't necessarily get any benefit out of it. So there's now legislation that's being introduced in the North Carolina General Assembly to say, hey, we want to study it for ourselves. And there's also been this growing list of communities in North Carolina that have passed resolutions to encourage Virginia to keep the ban on uranium mining. And these are, you know, Henderson, North Carolina, Creedmoor, North Carolina, Warren County, Vance County, North Carolina. I mean, there are sort of a growing list of localities that have stepped in and said, hey, we are not comfortable with Virginia beginning mining on this.
And what can they do? Let's say that in 2012, Virginia says, okay, we're going to allow this. It's, you know, and the reason may be for anything. Too many dollars that they might pass up or you know, money in my pocket as a legislator, whatever reason. How many other states of our 50 allow this to go on? And is there any way for North Carolina to make it stop after Virginia has said okay?
Well, there has not been a lot of mining in the United States, and there hasn't been a lot of milling in the United States in quite some time.
What's the difference?
Well, it's a good piece to know, because you know the uranium ore itself has a tiny, tiny fraction of actual sort of uranium. You know, it's less than it's a fraction of 1%. So you can't just mine the rock out of the ground and then haul it away, you know, let's say on a train like you would with perhaps with coal. You've got to mill it on site, which means you've got to sort of grind it up. You apply sort of this heavy chemical solution to it to leach the uranium out of the rock. And then right there on site, you mill it into what's called yellowcake. You remember there was a while back when we were trying to find weapons of mass destruction.
I watched The Simpsons.
Yeah, see, you've got all
I'm
the technical.
I'm fully aware of how uranium works.
Yeah, you've got all the.
I've got all the background information.
And it's just like that. It can fall into your pocket just like it does
right,
for.
And you carry it out.
For Homer.
So uranium, the ore, comes up, but then you have to do the nasty, dirty things to make it into yellow cake, which is the really radioactive part.
Well, which is the part that can eventually make its way into the fuel cycle for a nuclear power plant. Left behind, of course, is all those tailings, which have, you know, 85% of the radioactivity of the original rock. Plus, they also have now all these chemicals that were used to help leach the uranium out of the rock. And you've got to store those on site. So you dig a big containment cell, basically a lined landfill, and you try to manage that right there on site. And then the yellow cake itself gets shipped out of state. There's no facility in Virginia right now that enriches uranium, and you've got to go to an enrichment facility where it can be turned into, you know, fuel pellets and eventually into fuel rods. So that would have to go out of state to complete the fuel development process.
Well, we are talking with Kale Jaffe about uranium mining in Virginia. You can also send your question via instant message, WNRN Studio on the AOL site. And that's how we got a question that way, which is, what type of regulations would be needed?
Well,
so, go ahead.
What type of regulations would be needed to mine uranium?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you just sort of the gist of the process.
Because we have no regulations currently, right?
Right, there's nothing on the books right now in Virginia. The mining process, you know, the sort of the digging the ore out of the ground, that is managed exclusively by the state. The milling process, you know, getting leaching that uranium out to make yellowcake, that is managed, the default is by the federal government, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, but then a lot of states become what are called agreement states, where they develop their own programs that the feds approve, and then that also gets managed by the state. But right now, the lead agency for mining in Virginia is the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy. They don't have really any staff with any expertise on this, and why would they? They haven't. There's been a ban on uranium mining since 1982. Why would you waste your tax dollars on something where you don't have any mining regulations or any ability to mine in Virginia? What's key to know about the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, you know, they're obviously good folks over there, but they are woefully understaffed like a lot of Virginia agencies. Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, their budget amounts to less than one-tenth of 1% of the state's total budget, annual operating revenues. So a big question in terms of what are the regulations, how are we going to manage this? First question is, how are we going to deal with the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy that would have to become far larger, far more robust to have a chance of staying on top of this issue?
And dial us up if you want to add your question into Elaine Eats All, whoever sent that in for that last question by WNRN Studio. Dial us up if you'd like to ask your question, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on air today. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics. Dial them, 296-9746. And online, it's brgtshirts.com. I see somebody ringing up now. Kristen will take care of that. Kale, you look like you've got something in your hand that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of, I had mentioned sort of American rivers and the most endangered rivers site, you know, or most endangered rivers list. You know, folks should definitely go to AmericanRivers.org and check out that list and learn more about the threat that has put our river, the Roanoke River, on number three on that most endangered list. The other thing I wanted to share with folks is, we have launched, and by we I mean sort of a broad array of groups in Virginia, have launched the Keep the Ban Coalition. We had a launch for that back on May 12th, and it's been incredibly successful, frankly, wildly successful beyond what I had initially expected. We've got more than 40 different localities that have passed resolutions opposing uranium mining or opposing lifting the ban. We've got localities and organizations, more than 40 localities and organizations that have taken a position on uranium mining. So there's a growing statewide concern about this issue.
And to that person who called in, obviously I can't manage the hold button. So try that again, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Questions, comments, and there's the phone line going again. Sorry about that. For Kale, Senior Attorney Kale Jaffe, from the Southern Environmental Law Center, as we talk about, mostly talking about the cons of uranium mining in Virginia. I don't know that that I've done a very good job. Are there any pros? Is there one single positive thing that comes with the possibility of allowing uranium mining in Virginia?
Well, I'll tell you what the industry has been saying. They've been saying, one, this will create jobs for Southside Virginia, which is an area that we know has struggled mightily, you know, with the loss of tobacco, the loss of textiles. Unemployment's a real concern down there. What I would say in response to that is, one, we've got to remember this is a statewide issue. There's potential mine sites in Orange County and Culpeper. and not just in Southside. So we can't look at it as just a one region issue. It's a statewide issue. The other point is, and this is, you know, fleshed out by the folks at American Rivers, as you look at this diverse river from the Blue Ridge Mountains to the Outer Banks, there's a great opportunity to develop tourism, to develop fisheries, to develop agriculture, all of which would be threatened if you go ahead and mine at this site.
Let's take our call from Michelle in Richmond. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rick.
Thank you so much for calling in.
First of all, Rick, I want to thank you for bringing issues like this to the public. You know, a lot of us like me don't read the paper and listen to you, and then we find out about these things before they're down on us and down for the count and nobody can do anything. So thank you. Gentlemen, my question is the physical type of mining that's done with this, is it going to be something horrible like, you said Coles Hill, is it going to be something horrible like mountaintop removal, or is it going to be excavation, like, is it going to be like coal mining in the physical sense?
I'd say it's pretty different than coal mining, and it's a good question, Michelle. The way it would be mined is most likely would be underground mining. In other words, they dig a big hole, they go in down to where the ore is and haul it out. The other likely opportunity is open pit mining, where because the Coles Hill deposit actually is very close to the surface, what they would do is just basically create a huge pit and excavate the uranium that way. Those are the two options, both of which are on the table. A while back, the company was saying they were going to go with open pit. At a recent investors conference, they told folks they've decided to change their plans. They're now looking at underground, but it's going to be one of those two is what they're proposing.
And Michelle, let me, for those of you who can't read my body language when I talk about it, it's not coal like what you put in your fireplace or on your grill. It's not C-O-A-L. It's like the last name of someone, C-O-L-E. You want to look it up online, and we'll give you the YouTube piece in a little bit. There's a wonderful like 7-minute documentary video that was put together by someone at Southern Environmental Law Center where you can see it. But if you want to go online, it's C-O-L-E Farm.
Actually, it's C-O-L-E-S. It's the Coles family, C-O-L-E-S. So it's S apostrophe, not apostrophe S.
Okay. I have another question, too. You mentioned, I believe, that it was the seventh largest deposit in the world.
In North America.
No, I'm sorry, North America. Do they have an estimate of, like, how many pounds they'll get out and how long it'll take them to do it and what surface area will be disturbed?
You know, they do have that estimate, and unfortunately I didn't bring those figures with me to the radio station this morning, but you know it's significant. You know it would be the largest deposit in the United States, seventh largest in North America. So you're talking about a significant disturbance as a result, a significant threat to water quality downstream.
And Michelle, hang on for a second. Kale, you were talking earlier at the beginning of the program about how another scientist, and I believe more than one. But there was one specifically, I believe, with Virginia Uranium, who said that he believes that there are other significantly large areas of uranium just in the state of Virginia throughout the central Virginia area, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so Virginia Energy Resources, sort of the parent company here, they were talking to investors in London, and their executive said, you know, our lead geologist is insistent to this day that this is the first of more major discoveries in Virginia. In fact, there's been a professor at Virginia Tech who has said that, yeah, he would imagine that the East Coast has a lot of similarly large mineable deposits like this. The threat is absolutely a statewide threat. And the Department of Mine, Minerals, and Energy has done some research, and federal government has done some research, and there are more than 60 different spots that they found throughout the Piedmont where there are elevated levels of uranium compared to sort of background that you would expect worldwide in terms of just sort of picking up radiometric signatures. And so, which is not to say that there are 60 mineable sites. You know, I'm not saying that at all. But there's certainly a lot of places where mining companies would be expected to go ahead and research and look into mining if the ban gets lifted.
Wow. Well, would it, I don't know geology, but would it follow whatever the Roanoke River pathway, you know, whatever fault or whatever it is for the river, does it follow that drainage area, do you suppose?
Actually, if you've looked at the maps, and USGS has done some of these maps, and the state Department of Mines and Minerals Energy has done some of these maps, the terrains that the uranium deposits seem to follow almost go right with the Piedmont. So it sort of follows that sort of the Appalachian Ridge line just east of it up the
So it's a north and south line.
It's more of a north-south line than it is an east-west line. So it goes all the way up to, you know, they've had leases in Fauquier County up, you know, close to northern Virginia.
So it's like maybe an elevation thing brought it up.
Follow Route 29 from Danville up to Route 66, and that's where you cross a bunch of those deposits, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh. And well, let someone else ask a question, but if it's on Route 29, we can all demonstrate out there quite well.
I look forward to seeing you there.
Thanks, bye-bye. Michelle. All right, phone lines are open for your questions or comments. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCK. Send me an instant message at WNRN Studio on the instant message site there.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And this week, Lyme disease is on the rise in Virginia, and while the illness can be treated quickly in its early stage, more Virginians are discovering just how serious a missed diagnosis can be. Frank Friedman went to community college, and he never wanted to leave. Now the president of Piedmont Virginia Community College says he's the head of the best around in education. And our local Blue Mountain Brewery made the cover of Food & Wine magazine for their tasty specialty brews. The Hook, amazing each and every Thursday. And support today also coming from The Backyard, the UVA Coroner's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard has a spring menu, daily specials, and an ever-changing list of beers on tap. For more info, it's 202-8215, thebackyarduva.com, or find them on Facebook. All right, back with our guest, Cale Jaffe from Southern Environmental Law Center. If you're just tuning in, where have you been? And we're talking about uranium mining in Virginia. Cale, we were talking about AmericanRivers.org, and I guess that was the group that said Roanoke River is in the top 10, I believe number 3, mm-hmm. in terms of areas most under threat. One of the quotes that I found from them, Virginia is under-resourced to regulate a massive uranium industry. You know, the way as someone is not sure exactly which side of this I want to be on, massive, does that mean if we just allow this to happen one at a time, that we can, because we can focus on this one, and then when they're done, we can go over here and focus on this one? Or what can we do to provide the proper resources so that we can regulate it?
Well, you know, the issue in terms of it being under-resourced goes back to that figure I mentioned earlier, the Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy. Their budget is less than 0.1% of the state's total operating dollars. So Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy is woefully underfunded to try to get on top of this issue.
But if
in terms of... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No.
Well, just to say, in terms of sort of what we can do to sort of try to remedy that problem, the first thing we have to do is really understand more and make sure that the public understands more about what the threat is. You know, there are 4 different studies, as we've talked about. You know, the City of Virginia Beach has got their study, National Academy of Sciences. There are a couple of different socioeconomic studies. A key piece of these studies, and in fact, it's in the state's contract with the National Academy of Sciences, a key piece of the studies is public education. In other words, not just doing the studies and having these dense technical reports, but actually sort of having a little bit of a roadshow, going out, putting it into language that, you know, folk can understand, and actually talking about it community by community to educate us so that we learn more about what the issues are. That's a big piece that is why we're opposed to any legislation in January 2012, because there's no way to do that public education piece basically over Christmas. You know, the studies come back mid-December, legislature goes in early January. When are you going to do that public education piece to help people understand more about these studies?
We keep talking about the legislature coming together in 2012 to discuss whether or not to do this and remove the moratorium and allow it to happen. Anytime you start talking about politicians and dirty things that might be allowed to happen, and I don't mean that in a sexist sort of way, you know, it's not like people are sleeping around, but I mean that in something that makes your hands dirty to allow something that not everyone might approve of. Because I would assume that just by mentioning the word uranium and tossing in radioactivity, most people are going to go, no, unless you're making money on it.
Right, and there's a small group of people that stand to make, obviously, a lot of money, which is why this company is being publicly traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange.
Are any politicians, where do the politicians stand today? They aren't being asked to vote on it. The governor, from what I read, had said, let me read more about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also read somewhere, and again, for doing my homework, was that some legislators had received campaign contributions from this company.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we absolutely makes this an uphill struggle for us, is the mining company is incredibly well-funded effort. They've hired all of the big-name lobbyists in Richmond. I mean, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not $1 million a year on lobbying. They're putting a huge press on in this. They've been flying, they flew a first group of legislators over, I believe it was last year, to France, ostensibly to go look at an old mine site, but also to get a free trip to France. They're flying another group of legislators or a couple groups of legislators again this summer. So there's no doubt that Virginia Uranium Incorporated and Virginia Energy Resources are putting a huge amount of dollars into this. The question is, how's that going to play out when you've got 40 plus different localities and organizations that are stepping up and saying, whoa, wait a minute, we're not sure this is the right choice for our community.
Do we know as of today in 2011 where the 140, is that right?
Yep.
That there are 100 senators and representatives. I believe Virginia has 140, although I stopped reading the newspaper a long time ago. Do we know where those stand just on today's vote?
It's hard to say. We've obviously, and I know Virginia Uranium is doing the same, spending a lot of time trying to talk to legislators to educate them about the issue so that they understand the risks. One stumbling block we come up against is a lot of folks, including the governor, say, well, I'm going to wait for the National Academy of Sciences study. If the National Academy of Sciences says it can be mined safely, then I'm for it. If they say it can't, then I won't. In fact, that's the company's been saying pretty much the same thing. The problem with that is the company knows, and as we know, at every single one of these meetings that the NAS has, the National Academy of Sciences, they say, we are not going to decide whether it can be mined safely. We're going to give you a data dump, essentially. We're going to research the issue. We're going to have a very dense study that's going to say, on the one hand, and on the other hand, and it's going to just be a data dump. And it's going to be for the folks in Richmond, the policymakers, to decide whether they want to take that risk. There's no yes, it's safely, it's not yes, it's safe, or no, it's unsafe. It's a risk, and it's a spectrum. It's a question of how comfortable we are with that risk.
Again, 11:49 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about uranium mining in Virginia, with Cale Jaffe from Southern Environmental Law Center. Let me thank Dixon Disposal for letting us be here today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. But you can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. More can be found at 978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. And Drew Thompson should be here at noon for Les Temps Purdue. He has the best of 80s and 90s alternative, like Maternal Issue, Talking Head, and Sponge, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. Requests are always welcome on Les Temps Purdue. Back with Kale for our last 10 minutes or so on this topic. Keep talking about the National Academy of Sciences and their study and how they say that we're not going to determine whether or not it's
safe or not. Right?
Safe or not. But everyone knows that you dump a bunch of data out and it's all about how you interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that doesn't really do anything except for the people who've already made up their minds and how they want to interpret it.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, that's a huge piece for us, is that there's this risk that the National Academy of Sciences will be misunderstood, in that people think it's either a checking off the box to say they can go forward or cannot go forward. It's going to inform, you know, as I've said before, it's going to inform the debate, but it won't resolve the debate for us. One thing I, you know, you mentioned that video, and I would strongly encourage folks to go. It's on Southern Vermont Law Center's YouTube channel. It's also on the website for American Rivers on this.
What is that YouTube channel? That YouTube, because I found that to be really, really enlightening.
To be honest, I don't know the web address for our own YouTube channel. I do know if you go to southernenvironment.org, you can go to the SELC's webpage, Southern Environmental Law Center's page, and you can find the video through that. It's also on the American Rivers page, AmericanRivers.org, and I believe it's also on Piedmont Environmental Council's webpage. I should mention the video was produced jointly by Piedmont Environmental Council and Southern Vermont Law Center. It's something that we worked on together. And I can say this because I had very little to do with actually doing the video. I'm not the video or AV technical person at all, but I found it a very stirring and powerful video.
And I did as well, and we'll give a high five to Kat, who I always end up emailing and saying, "Hey, Kat, I need to do a show, and this topic caught my eye. Can you help me put this together?" And then you told me that she did the, or was one of the two people who put the film together as well.
Yeah, the two people that put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that are Kat McHugh at Southern Environmental Law Center and Catherine Vance with Piedmont Environmental Council. So yeah, Catherine and Kat deserve hearty pats on the back for a great video.
One of the things that I found, I'm always curious about bits and pieces of what's going on, and the newspapers. And again, with a newspaper, it's tough to tell whether it's an op-ed, whether it's a letter to the editor from someone with an invested interest, or whether the company just bought out the page and had it promoted as though it were an unbiased opinion. And you can't tell that anymore, especially online. It's a little harder to look. But both the Danville Register and the Chatham Star Tribune both had pieces of information there that I read that seemed as though they were promoting the possibility of, let's have the uranium mining. We need it.
I'll say, you know, we've had from the Danville Register and B, we've had what I can see is some pretty good editorials. There's one this morning that's on their webpage. Folks can go and check out. I think their website is godanriver.com. Throwing out a lot of websites today.
Well, if you Google uranium mining Virginia, you get all this stuff pops up, and it's fairly interesting material to read.
Yeah. And in terms of sort of the local view on it, there have been a lot of local folks who have come to us, who have gotten involved, that are forming new organizations because of this threat. Folks like, you know, Deborah and Philip Lovelace who are down there near the site. I've talked to their farmers down there. There's a guy named Byron Motley who's in that video, who's a farmer who's been down there his whole life. His family's been there for generations. They're looking at the threat. There's the local chapter of the NAACP down there has gotten involved in being opposed to mining because of the environmental justice concerns that they have with it. So there's a lot of local opposition, actually, that's growing as people learn more and more about this issue.
One of the things I found from the newspaper, or not from the newspaper, from the video, was that four of the largest dairy farms in the state would be affected by the mining. I guess they're all part of in the basin.
That larger Roanoke River watershed, yeah.
Right, and so you have, it doesn't just contaminate the water, but then it contaminates the grass, but then contaminates the cows themselves. And so you would think that every mother would stand up, not that the father wouldn't as well, but again, I'm just stereotyping my picture of all the mothers standing up with, with their symbols of their child having to drink milk that was affected by uranium mining.
Yeah, it's I'll say as a father of three kids, I'm definitely proud to be working on this case and trying to address this risk. I talked to one legislator who said a farmer had approached him who said, you know, what happens if there's a major spill at a containment cell holding all this radioactive uranium waste and my cattle are contaminated and all of a sudden I lose my product, I lose my ability to sell my product. What happens to me? Who compensates me? And there's no answer right now. That farmer right now is sort of hung out to dry. So there are a lot of folks who would be on the negative side of a socioeconomic balance if this were to go forward, especially if there were a major spill.
Let me take 11:56 here in the wake-up call. A few minutes left with our guest, Cale Jaffe, senior attorney at the Southern Environmental Law Center, as we talk about uranium mining in Virginia, something we have had a moratorium on for nearly 30 years, and the discussion is up to allow that at the Coles Hill Farm in 2012 is when the discussion will be put to vote, I guess. WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Got another question through the instant message site. Gentlemen talking about hydraulic fracking in Western Virginia, mm-hmm. and asked for you to do a comparison between that and this. And we got about 3 minutes left, and I need a little background on what
sure.
hydraulic fracking is.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a show on that in the future.
Hydraulic fracking or hydraulic fracturing or fracking, as it's called, is a process used that's to produce or develop natural gas resources. There's a area in Virginia called the Marcellus Shale that roughly patterns with their George Washington National Forest where there's believed to be a lot of natural gas. I'm not the expert on the hydraulic fracturing. What I will say is what's similar about both threats is, one, both are water contamination threats primarily, whether that's through hydraulic fracturing or uranium mining, and both right now are, you know, the regulations are unset in Virginia. It's sort of the wild west of mining with both of those right now. We don't, there's a lot of unanswered questions in both areas.
All right, just a minute left. Thanks to Blueberry Bicycle for that question. Off the internet. Cale, if the vote takes place in 2012, it seems to me that anything that's this sort of important and has such great divisiveness always gets pushed back. There's too many people who say, I'm not ready for this, give me more information on this. Do you expect that from the legislators? And if so, if it gets pushed back to 2013, does that bring the businesses involved even forward at a stronger pace?
You know, it's hard to predict how the politics of this will go. It's absolutely, this is a make-or-break year for it. We know from the investors' talks that the uranium mining company has given in London and in Toronto and in New York City that they are pushing to lift the ban this year. And we know that they've been flying legislators over to Paris, France for ostensibly for tours and to enjoy a free trip to France, and that they're putting a pretty aggressive push on the legislature this year. So this is a make or break year. This is a time for folks to go ahead and educate themselves on the issue, contact their legislators about it. You know, go check out the American Rivers website. Learn more about why this is number three on the most endangered rivers list in the United States right now.
All right, Cale, hopefully we've done our bit with our hour for educational purposes. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.